6% members only discount.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Larry Allen of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Larry speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now here's your host, Larry Allen.
Honored here today to have a legend with me in the studio, a legend in the government acquisition community. He is David Drabkin, and we'll introduce David in just a minute. I think it's going to be a great half-hour show today. Really get a rare opportunity to hear a true expert talk about his views about what's going on in different aspects of acquisition. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that for a limited time, winding down now, nominations are open indeed still for the Excellence in Partnership Awards. If you haven't caught Off the Shelf or listened to Federal News lately, the Excellence in Partnership Awards are the awards program that honors the individuals and organizations that have made GSA's procurement programs great. So if you're a contractor, a GSA employee, or a GSA loyal customer, or know somebody who fits one of those categories, check out all you need to know about nominating a deserving person or organization at EIPAwards.org. That's EIPAwards.org, or call the coalition. Melissa King can answer everything you need to know, 202-331-0975. So I mentioned my guest today is David Drabkin. David's the former senior procurement executive for the General Services Administration. He now hangs his hat at a major government contractor, and I'm pleased to have him back on Off the Shelf to offer some of his views now from the private sector on acquisition. David Drabkin, welcome back to Off the Shelf.
Thanks for having me back, Larry. And before I get started, let me just make it clear that what I'm going to say in response to your questions today represents my opinion and not that of my employer, Northrop Grumman.
Fair enough. I'm sure we've got a lot to say. I wanted to start with one of the topics, Dave, that is extremely at the forefront of acquisition discussions these days, and that is the acquisition workforce. I'd love to get your views on it right now, particularly in DOD, although it's not limited to DOD. There's a lot of discussion about bringing acquisition-related jobs that have been outsourced to industry back into government. And there's a feeling that that's a very core government function. And certainly it is happening. But how realistic is it to expect that so many people are available to be insourced? I mean, Dave, do that number of people really exist?
Well, the short answer to your question is no. The number of people that both the Department of Defense and the civilian agencies need to properly staff their acquisition functions don't currently exist in the private sector. And the private sector itself is having difficulty scrambling to find people with the right training and experience to do these kinds of jobs. I know that my colleagues in DOD have outlined a program to hire, I believe it's 4,000 people in their acquisition workforce this year, and I understand from their statistics they are well on their way to doing it, but I think what you will find is most of these people are entry-level folks who will require a great deal of training and education and on-the-job training before they are competent to be set loose, as you were in the acquisition field, to do their jobs.
So if you're going to be bringing in some entry-level people, we're going to not have the number of trained people. If DOD is bringing in a lot of trained people, they're going to be depriving other government agencies of trained people. In some cases, contractors may lose a few people. But we're talking about a in terms of experienced people anyway, Dave, a known community, at least in terms of its general size, right?
Yeah, I think that's a fair observation. And what we're doing is we're all robbing each other and have been for the last 5 or 6 years. when I was at GSA, we would hire somebody in, and they'd be there for a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, and they'd be hired away by DHS or DOD by offering them a higher level of pay when the DOD was under the pay scale program, or a higher grade, and we would do the same to them. But what we were essentially doing was each hiring from the other, robbing the other to, I believe the expression is robbing Peter to pay Paul. And we weren't really advancing the ball either in increasing or solving the problem that we created back in the late 90s when, in response to the Clinton administration's desire to reduce the size of government, we simply stopped hiring people. And as a result, I believe it's Shea Assad who coined the term, we have the bathtub effect. So folks with 10 or more years of experience really aren't existent in our workforce, or for that matter, in the contractors and the vendors workforce. And so we're all scrambling to find people with the right amount of experience. And quite frankly, I think we're going to have to tough through it for about a decade until we've hired collectively, industry and government, enough people. We've trained them, and they've acquired the experience they need to spend the huge amount of money that they've been charged with spending. A lot of people don't realize it, but $560+ billion in government contracts last year, federal government contracts, is more money than most countries have as a budget for a year. And that's just what we spent on government contracts. That doesn't include the loans, grants, and assistance programs, which over double that. So we've got a tough road ahead. Nobody should make the light of it. Nobody should talk about it as being easy. And quite frankly, we should prepare for the fact that we're just going to have to tough through the next 5, 6, possibly 10 years till we get where we need to be, all of us.
So that's right. So an understanding of the impact that has on acquisition oversight, these are problems that can't be solved in a day, but it will require the resources of everyone in the procurement community, industry or government, in order for the programs and the systems to function correctly. I think the very good observations. Dave Drapkin, I want to talk also a little bit about the current state of the regulatory acquisition landscape. This is going to be a big topic, but let's get started. What are some of the major issues coming from this administration in this arena, and what do they tell us about their ideas of acquisition?
Well, I'm not sure that the issues originated with this administration. I think in the last administration, during the Bush administration, the acquisition regulatory process began to falter. When the Office of Federal Procurement Policy Act was passed and the current regulatory process was established and the FAR was mandated and ultimately, as you know, published, I believe it was 1984 for the first time, replacing the ASPR and the Federal Procurement Regulation. There was an idea that, and there was a concept that the government would
do some things to help oversee the program and process. I want to come back and have us finish that thought about what's going on with the acquisition regulatory process with my guest today, Dave Drapkin, GSA's former senior procurement executive and now a guru in industry. I'm Larry Allen, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title, the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldrich, a name you can trust.
And welcome back to Off the Shelf, where I am Larry Allen, your humble host here every Tuesday at this precise time on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where we bring you the very latest developments in the world of commercial solutions procurement. I want to remind you that if you are amazingly loyal listeners, have a question for me, your show host, a question for my guest today, or a topic you'd like to see us raise here on Off the Shelf, you know where to find us. Our email address at the station is offtheshelf@federalnewsradio.com. That's offtheshelf@federalnewsradio.com. We love to hear from you. Keep those cards and letters coming. My guest today in the studio is Dave Drabkin. Dave is the former chief senior procurement executive at the General Services Administration, currently with one of the very large government contractor systems integrators. Dave, as we went into that first break, I kind of had to cut you short a little bit, but I want to hear your full views on the major regulatory acquisition-related issues that are coming from this administration and what, if anything, they tell us about their views, this administration's views on acquisition.
As I was saying before we went to break, the FAR process envisioned a process in which the folks involved in acquisition would develop regulations, would seek public comment on those regulations, and would finalize those regulations, and they would coordinate those regulations within the respective agencies, and thus was created not only the FAR Council, but the Civilian Agency Acquisition Council and the Defense Acquisition Regulatory Council. What has happened, however, since about the middle of the Bush administration is that many of the regulations, some of them absolutely critical to how we do business, have been developed by other agencies and other people outside of the acquisition process and shipped to the FAR Council, and the FAR Council was directed to implement them. And in fact, changes to them were by the acquisition people to make them to first question whether or not we should have them as part of the acquisition process, and then second, to make sure that they would work better and reduce the costs and the impact on the acquisition process. The opportunity for the FAR Council to become involved in that was diminished by directive, and this administration has continued that process. The whole idea of the FAR Council is that this independent group of people who understand the acquisition process, the impact that new regulations have on cost and schedule and performance, would evaluate policies made by other parts of the government and figure out the best way to implement them so as to minimize the impact on quality, schedule, and price. And that's not what's happening. The FAR Council, as it used to be composed, as it used to meet and actually run the process, has basically stopped. And now I think the result is that many of the regulations that have been published really don't take into account the real impact that those regulations are having on cost, schedule, and performance. That's adding to the problems that like DOD is having in trying to figure out how to do more with no more, as I think Brett Lambert and Secretary Carter talked about it. And it's time, I think, for people to look back and go back to the basics and make the FAR Council do its job.
Well, I know there certainly seems to be some definite drivers from this administration in terms of what it would like to do with acquisition. In fact, Steve Schooner, who's also been a guest here on Off the Shelf over from George Washington Law School, said recently that you can almost follow it on the calendar that every 7 days after a huge national or international disaster, the administration comes out with a new acquisition policy. So, you know, here we are in the middle of hurricane season. We certainly hope that that doesn't portend for a stormy acquisition season as well, although You never know. There are also some vacancies in that FAR council right now, too, right? I mean, you know, your old seat, and it's hard to replace a David Drapkin. What do you see, Dave, for the future of some of the stuff here? I mean, you've got a lot of new people coming in, some with their own sets of knowledge, some with not very much sets of knowledge at all.
Well, first of all, I don't think the FAR council should be personality-driven in the fact that, you know, that one member of the FAR council, or generally career members of either DOD, NASA, or GSA, comes and goes shouldn't have any impact on the process. The real issue is, are you going to let the acquisition people, which the OFPP Act contemplated, do their job on implementing policies either from Congress or the president, and implementing them in a way that reduces the impact to the extent it can on cost, schedule, and performance? Or are you going to have people who are generating these policies write the regulations for the FAR and not have that understanding, and the result being even greater increases in cost, or stretching out performance, or reducing the ability to meet schedule? So I don't think it's a personality-driven issue, and it should never become one. I do think that Dan Gordon, as the administrator of OFPP, who has been on the job a relatively short period of time, he has the obligation and the authority to reconstitute the FAR Council and to make it do its job, to make the process do its job, and to tell everybody else to do their job, which is develop whatever socioeconomic policy you think is appropriate, and then turn it over to the FAR Council and let the FAR Council use the process to implement it in a way that reduces the impact on the contracts, the contracting community, and ultimately the American taxpayer who has to pay for it. I know the president is looking to reduce the cost of acquisition. I know that Dr. Carter is looking at a way to reduce the cost of acquisition, and one of the ways to do it is to make the process work itself. You don't need a new process. You don't need to reinvent the process. You just need to go back to basics. You really just need to get it right.
Get it right. That's an old GSA slogan, and I want to come back and talk a little bit more about what's going on in GSA. But before we get off on that track, Dave, one more question here about the acquisition process. Always there's an administration stamp on what's going on here, regardless of whether we're talking this administration, the Clinton administration, any one of the Bush administrations. But if I'm hearing you right, this is maybe a little bit different.
No, I in fact, my point was this began in the Bush administration, where they had other agencies developing policy and implementing that policy through the FAR. For example, the mandatory disclosure rule wasn't written by the FAR Council. It was written by a team in the Justice Department with IGs involved. And it certainly displays, I think people who've read it will tell you, that it certainly doesn't display a fundamental understanding of the acquisition process, the previous, for example, voluntary disclosure process, and other issues related to acquisition.
So a little bit something that's not particularly discreet to this administration, but people who see the number of dollars, I think, rather involved in the acquisition process, as Dave mentioned, and find it difficult to keep their hands off. When we come back, I want to talk to Dave Drapkin, my guest today, a little bit about GSA and some of the challenges facing that agency. I'm Larry Allen, your host, and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Nominations for the Excellence in Partnership Awards are open. Here's your chance to recognize innovation and excellence in the contracting programs of the General Services Administration. Nominate that company that's gone the extra mile in supporting a government agency. Nominate that GSA representative who calls on your office and provides support. Nominate your own agency to recognize your innovative use of GSA to meet your agency's mission. Winners will be announced at the EIP Awards on November 1st. Go to EIPAwards.org and nominate someone today. That's EIPAwards.org.
And welcome back to Off the Shelf, where I am Larry Allen, president of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and your host here every Tuesday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where we bring you the latest developments in the world of commercial solutions procurement. As I mentioned at the top of the show, our nominations are open for about another week or so on the Excellence in Partnership Awards. The EIPs reward the individuals and organizations that have made significant contributions to the Schedules program and other GSA acquisition programs as well. Check out everything you need to know about nominating people and sponsoring at EIPAwards.org. That's EIPAwards.org. Or call Melissa King at the Coalition, 202-331-0975. My guest today in the studio is David Drapkin. Dave is the former senior procurement executive for GSA, now a titan in industry, working for one of the major government systems integrators. We've been talking this half hour about the state of acquisition policy, things like the acquisition workforce, some of the current pressures in acquisition policy, what the impact is in terms of cost on everybody involved in it. Dave, as I promised our listeners going into that last break, I want to turn our attention now to GSA, an agency with which you have some degree of familiarity. What are some of the major challenges that are confronting GSA Administrator Martha Johnson today? What are the things that you see coming out of GSA that maybe are a little surprising? What are the things that you see, particularly in terms of their use of e-tools for collaboration, or perhaps a little bit hopeful?
Well, first of all, I don't pretend to speak for Martha Johnson. In fact, we didn't speak very much at all until the time I left. I do think that based upon the 10 years that I was at GSA and my observations of GSA, that the first thing that anyone has to observe about GSA is that the agency has done exceedingly well overall in meeting the requirements of its customers, whether it's in the real estate world through our public buildings, through GSA's public building service. I have to remember it's not ours anymore, it's theirs. Or it's through the acquisition of personal property and services through the Federal Acquisition Service. They have done exceedingly well, but there's certainly room for them to do better. I mean, GSA led the way with electronic purchasing when it created GSA Advantage back in the 1990s. In fact, I believe Bill Gormley, someone with whom you're uniquely familiar, Larry, was the father of that program.
I think I know that.
And at the time, it was revolutionary. It was new. It was before the internet had really matured and developed, and it was the right idea. But the nature of how people do business today has changed dramatically since the 1990s, and GSA Advantage and GSA's ability to do electronic procurements have not changed with the same pace. It's not because they don't have the funds to do it. GSA has funds to do it. They're allowed to retain earnings in excess of their operating needs. It's a question of making it a priority. It's amazing to me that in 2010, the premier acquisition agency in the government, which GSA really is, doesn't have an end-to-end acquisition system, which not only allows them to purchase on behalf of their government customers, but allows their government customers to purchase and to gather the data they need to make the kinds of decisions that will benefit the taxpayer. Specifically, I'm talking about the kinds of things that the Mass panel studied and observed, and you and I sat on that panel together. And you may recall that our customers on that panel complained bitterly that they couldn't get current pricing information in order to determine when they were placing task orders whether the prices they were paying were fair and reasonable. In today's environment, that can be fixed so easily. And it's a shame that the agency that led the whole government in doing electronic procurement back in the late 90s is not providing that same leadership today. I think that is a challenge for Martha. She's had the report of the Mass panel now for several months. People in GSA were aware of what the report said because it was published and online for months before that. And unless GSA figures out how to address better use of electronics and the web and the cloud to improve the way their customers can buy things and get information about what they buy, other agencies will eclipse them, like NASA's SOUP, like CIOSP2, like the Department of Defense's CPORT-E. And so I think while GSA is still the premier acquisition agency, I think they have to get ready to jump that S-curve and get ahead again of the rest of the government.
Oh, my goodness. There's that word, S-curve. I didn't think anybody outside of Bill Gormley land knew about the S-curve. For our listeners who are interested, let us know if you'd like us to do a show on the S-curve. I can assure you it would be very stimulating. Dave Drab, can you mention the Multiple Award Schedule Advisory Panel? As you alluded to, that was a panel that both you and I were on, among others. Martha Johnson has the recommendations now. I know they're being studied a little bit by the Federal Acquisition Service. What do you think are the prospects for any of these recommendations making the light of day? And if so, which ones might they be?
Well, first of all, I think it's really important that people recognize that on the mass panel were a number of our customers, the senior procurement executives from departments who are some of our biggest buyers. And they observed that they were concerned about the ability of their buyers to get the information they needed in order to make wise decisions when they placed task orders. GSA has got to find a way to do it. Now, if the mass panel recommendations aren't the way to do it, although I quite frankly think that the experts on the panel considered all the alternatives, but I don't think the mass panel report's way is the only way. If there's another way, do it. But GSA has got to respond to its customers. In 2004, the Department of Defense almost cut GSA off completely because of issues related to how we did procurement. And our other customers made it awful clear during the course of that panel that if GSA didn't begin providing them with the kinds of information they needed so they could make wise acquisition decisions, that they would turn elsewhere to do their buying. And there's evidence that some of this is happening. Shea announced at a breakfast which you hosted at the Coalition that they'd gone to the Department of Interior to do a $500 million buy, and that the Department of Interior had done it so well, they were going to give them another $1 billion. Now, that's business that should have been at GSA. It's business that could have been facilitated by an acquisition solution, and it's business that's not being obtained today.
So there are some definite challenges out there for your former agency, GSA, in terms of implementing the e-tools and keeping its ear to the customer. Recent guest on Off the Shelf was Steve Kempf, the new commissioner of FAS, and Steve and I have talked. I think that's going to be a priority of his. Sounds like it needs to be. Dave Drabkin, the former senior procurement executive at GSA and currently a titan with one of the major systems integrators in government. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today on Off the Shelf.
Thanks for having me. And by the way, Steve Kemp's top-notch. I think we can look for great things from him.
I agree, and we certainly hope to have that happen, particularly for those of us who want to see GSA succeed. I'm Larry Allen, your host here on Off the Shelf. I want to thank you for tuning in to us today.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Larry Allen of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.